Dave Pallone joins us, and what a great thrill to have this Hall of Famer with us. Dave, welcome to Trout Radio.
Well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before I get to all your accomplishments, and of course we know you're on the cusp of real greatness here, correct me if I'm wrong, but you didn't come from a harness racing background per se, did you?
No, I really didn't. You know, most of the guys in this business have had success as second or third generation horsemen, and I was just kind of a fan of the sport. My dad had a couple harness horses as I was a kid growing up, and I'd go to the track with him, and I just got hooked on it.
What is it about your background that made you such a good fit with harness racing? Obviously, you're athletic, and I want to touch on that in a minute, but what do you think gave you the tools going in?
You know, I just was very competitive, and actually, I did have a little bit of a horse background in the fact that I started out showing in 4-H. I started out Western, and then I went to the 3 and 5 gated horses. So I had a little history with horses, and that's what infatuated me so much with something that I could do maybe after school, that I'd be able to compete and, you know, and still get to, you know, still fall in love with the horses and have a part with the horses. So it was just a perfect fit for me.
You were also an athlete growing up in high school, I take it?
Yes, I was a three-sport athlete. Didn't do too bad, but at 5'9", 145, you aren't going to get many offers to do much.
Well, maybe not from the Rams, but hey, you know, you might be okay in other sports. You certainly worked out here. You're on the cusp of greatness, as we said, and when you try and look at it in the big picture, you know, you can, and I'm not trying to overstate this, you know, you can compare this to Aaron's 715th or all the records put up by a Gretzky or Roger Maris. But for me, what really stands out, and it's because we in harness racing tend to live in the shadow sometimes of our thoroughbred cousins, but I didn't know if you're aware of this or not. Are you aware that you have more wins than any thoroughbred jock? You surpassed Lafitte Pinquet, and then after Russell Bayes broke his record, he's only got 11,000 victories. You've got 15,000 and change. Has that ever really sunk in with you?
You know, it really hasn't, and I've actually followed those guys because I've had the pleasure of owning a few thoroughbreds, and I love the thoroughbred game as well. But, you know, I probably had more opportunities and more starts than them, but it's still nice to be recognized in the same, you know, sentence as them. And as far as Hervé goes, I don't think anyone's ever going to replace Hervé. He was a legend in my eyes growing up as a kid and mentored me early and gave me a lot of good advice along the way. And he's been so supportive in this chase. So, you know, I don't really foresee myself as any spectacular athlete. I don't do the work. The horses do the work.
Yeah, but you got to have the hands and you got to be in physical condition. And again, I want to touch on that because one of the things you've attributed your success to is physical conditioning. You said that there's no successful driver today that weighs 200 pounds. You have to do the work, though, too.
Yeah, you know, I would hate to say that make a positive out of a racing accident, but in 2007 I broke my femur in a pretty severe accident here at the Meadows. And in order to get back from that, I had to do a lot of extensive therapy and got into a fitness kick. And my wife's an occupational therapist by trade, so that really helped me, and she made me put in the work. And once you get into a fitness kick, it's a little bit addicting. And I think that probably I felt better, and I do feel better now at 50 than I did at 30. So I feel, you know, like I'm still pretty quick and have all my reflexes. And if there's any advice I could give out there, it's just like any other sport. The better you get in shape, the better you're going to feel, the better you're going to do.
What are the things that must be a monkey on your back, or maybe won't be anymore, is the fact that, you know, you've spent your entire, you know, your home track has always been the Meadows, and you've racked up all those wins at the Meadows. Now that you're going to hopefully surpass Hervé's mark, do you think that gets that nagging question that if you'd only moved down to the Big M or gone down to Yonkers or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, we kicked that around here before we got the slot, and it was so enticing because, you know, Brian Sears was at the Meadows and David Miller was, and they both made the move out east, and they were very successful and turned out to be two of the best that the game's ever had. And I did have that opportunity to go out there, and I elected to stay here, and it was a family-based decision, and we couldn't be any happier with the way things have worked out with the lucrative stakes now in Pennsylvania. And, you know, we still get to bounce around and race on the Grand Circuit, so it's been a perfect fit for me. I live 4 miles from the track. My parents watch the races every night. It's just, you know, staying home has been a blessing in disguise.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but did not the governor of Pennsylvania try to dip into the Sire Stakes funds, or was that just a thoroughbred issue?
No, he did, and we've actually fought them off pretty good so far, and I think we've got that well under control. And
great, come on up to Ontario. Come on up, Dave. Better, let's take these guys on.
Maybe we'll lend you our lobbyist.
There you go. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's the terrible thing that's going on up there, and you know, I wish that you could get the word out and let the government know just how much and how many people they're going to hurt by doing this, and what a great sport harness racing is. I just don't think people really follow it close enough.
Oh, for sure. It's no secret when you tune into the Meadows on any given afternoon, you're down in every race. You've probably had the choice of five or six mounts, and regardless of which one you take, you're going to be the chalk. And anytime I see Dave Pallone on anything other than the chalk, I know myself as a player, I'm chunking it in on you, buddy. Does that put any added pressure on you on a race-to-race basis?
Well, you know, it in a way, it's frustrating because you do a lot of live work, but there are also times that you're over bet, and you know going to the gate that you almost want to yell over the fence, guys, you're on the wrong one here. But we've got such a tough driving colony, and it's so deep that there are six or seven I could give my opportunities to, and I'm sure that they would be leading driver. It's just, you know, I do drive for a lot of the top outfits, namely the Burks. So those type of horses and stables are going to take a lot of action, whether I'm driving them or one of the other fellas.
Yeah, and it can't hurt to be doing a lot of driving for a guy like Ron Burke, that's for sure.
It's been a good mix for me. Probably I owe most of my success to that outfit. And to this day, the Sweet Lou thing didn't work out in the North American Cup, but I really do believe we've got the right colt. And a lot of good things are going to happen the rest of the summer.
Oh, I think you're going to be just fine with Sweet Lou. That's a good team right there. Is there any one driver that you line up against and you say, boy, I got to bring my game up even higher if I'm going to compete with this guy?
You know, there are so many good drivers out there right now. And the guys on the East Coast, you just can't separate them. And you have quite a few great drivers up that way. And the young guns, I think that Canada has a lot of guys that have as big a future as anybody. But, you know, I've always been a John Campbell fan, and John doesn't maybe get the live work that he used to, but he's still the full package in my eyes and the number one guy that I look up to.
Yeah, that's, you know, $260-plus million in lifetime purse earnings. That's phenomenal. That, you know, it makes you wonder if anybody's going to really really beat that. Perhaps a Dave Pallone will. You touched on something in the past, and I want to bring this to the fore because it's something that I feel very strongly about, and so does anybody who cares about racing. I know John Campbell has said the same thing, and this goes to the issue of whipping. You have said that whipping a horse is not the answer. Can you elaborate on that? Because there's a lot of horse players, and God love them, but some of them are like real estate agents and think they know it all, who are, you know, prepared to say, no, the harder you hit a horse, the faster it goes.
You know, it just really is the case. These animals try hard enough. You know, you'll get some that are an exception to the rule, but for the most part, they give you what they've got, and noise works, you know, and hitting the wheel disc might work, but really, we could get along just fine without the whips. The whips that we carry are mainly for a safety issue now anyway, and if you watch any of the top guys in the game, the Brian Searses, the T-Tricks, you know, none of them are whip guys, and that's not just by coincidence.
No, that's right. And it's all, you know, most of it's all in the hands. You're right. I mean, and a fellow like you, speaking of good hands, here's what Hall of Famer Ron Gerfein said about you. You're half horse, he says. He says you spent so much time sitting behind them that it's like you're one of them. You understand the horse. You've got an easy pair of hands. You don't see horses pulling on Dave. He's just so much natural talent.
Well, you know, I'll take any kind of compliment I can get from Gerf. He's a legend in his own right, and he's put me on a lot of great horses over the years. But like I said, the horses actually do the work. I'd like to take a lot of credit, but, you know, it's the animal that should get more credit.
Just for the record, I feel a certain attachment to your one Little Brown Jug victory because my first Jug visit was in 2005 when you won with P47. So that was kind of cool to watch you win that day, that year.
Yeah, that was probably the still to this day probably my most memorable win.
It's Village Joe closing on the outside, P47, Rock and Roll Hanover down the stretch. Village Joe, P47 on the outside, nose to nose, stride for stride, P47 on the outside.
And, you know, it couldn't have happened to better guys. These guys were my buddies, and it was a real David and Goliath story with P-47 lining up against the three Pelling horses. So, yeah, that one will go down.
Yeah. You look at the Pallone resume, universal driving rating of 399. I mean, that's Ted Williams territory. Three consecutive years as North American wins leader, six Harness Tracks of America Driver of the Year Award, Little Brown Jug, Breeders' Crown. What's the next big mountain for Dave Pallone?
Well, we were hoping it was the North American Cup, but like I said, that's over with, and now we're looking towards the Meadowlands Pace. I'd love to win another Adios here at the Meadows, and, you know, potentially the Jug if things work out over there. I've got a really nice colt that got beat the other day in the Earl Beale Memorial at Pocono in the world record 50-4.
Oh, yeah.
My colt was breathing right down Goo Goo Gaga's back, and his name is Stormin' Norman, and he's a nice colt himself. So he's got Yonkers Trot coming up, Meadowlands. It should be a good summer for me.
Well, with a name like Norman, he's well-named anyway. One of the things I like about you is your sense of showmanship, really. I mean, you're not way out there, but you understand that we're in the entertainment business, and nowhere was that more clearly portrayed than when you hit 15,000 wins and you see Hervé Filion waiting for you in the winner's circle. And what is it you did? For those who weren't familiar, tell them what you did.
Well, I stood up in the bike. As a kid, I remember watching the Adios and Hervé coming back up on the bike seat with Hot Hitter, and the fans liked it, and they thought it was so cool. But the amazing thing is, none of that was planned. And I got the 15,000th win, and I was heading back over to the winner's circle as normal as can be, and Eric Ledford rode up to me, and he said, you know, you got to try and stand up in the bike.
Yeah.
Hervé would really like that.
Hervé Filion in attendance as Dave Pallone, in a tribute to Hervé Filion, is up in the bike with number three, Booze Boy.
And my first attempt, I got about a three, and I finally got up and drove the horse back over there. It's not as easy as it looks, but people got a kick out of it, and I'm glad.
Well, you get it, Dave Pallone. You really do, and we need more guys like you who get it and who hopefully can get our politicians to get it. Continued success the rest of the way. We will watch your career as it continues to grow and succeed. And thank you so much for this. This has been an honor.
Okay.
All
thank
the
you.
Best. All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Oh, there you go. What a good guy. That's another reason why I love my job. You've been listening to Trot Radio, a presentation of Standardbred Canada in cooperation with Ford Communications.